The seal is broken now on the Defense Department's first ever joint doctrine for military operations in cyberspace. The Pentagon first published it about a year and a half ago, but that document was secret until this week. Now a declassified version is out. A lot of it is a retread of what Pentagon officials have already said in public, but there are a few eyebrow raisers in it too. Federal News Radio DOD reporter Jared Serbu writing about it in this week's edition of Inside the Reporter's Notebook. What did you see in this now declassified document that made you say, Jared?
Yeah, there were a few things. And when I said retread, I don't mean to, you know, sort of minimize the potential value of this publication to the military itself. I mean, for internal purposes, I think there's a lot of potential that it has that is really valuable in terms of putting all the department's thinking about cyberspace into kind of one cohesive document in a language that makes sense to the Pentagon and kind of integrates with the way that the rest of the system thinks about the rest of its joint operations. I mean, GAO talked about this just a couple years ago. Up until now, there were something like 16 different joint publications that talked about cyber and you know, not really one place you could go if you wanted to understand it. The second thing I think it does, which is also really important, is it puts on paper, for the first time I've ever seen anyway, exactly which organizations are in charge of which functions in this whole cyberspace domain. I mean, it tells you exactly what U.S. Cyber Command's roles are, what DIS is supposed to do, exactly how CyberComs train and equip mission for cyber forces works with what the services and combatant commands are doing. And again, a lot of that is just sort of a consolidation on paper of what we've heard in dribs and drabs over the past few years whenever DOD folks have talked about this in public. But when you put it all together, I think it's a really valuable reference document for anyone who wants to look to one place and try to understand DOD's thinking about cyber. There were, as you referenced, a couple things I picked out as potentially new and interesting that I wrote about in the notebook this week. Yeah. One of them gets... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Because we're probably headed in the same direction. You and I think the same way on this stuff. So tell me yours, and then I'll tell you mine.
So one of them for me was kind of the roles and responsibilities between DOD and DHS. And the consistent mantra basically since Cyber Command was created was that they were not going to militarize the internet, militarize cyberspace. And so DHS basically got the mission of defending the .gov and .com networks, since they're mostly a civilian agency, as a way to ameliorate those concerns. But this joint pub basically says that DOD reserves the right to push that whole idea to the side if there's a genuine threat to national security, according to someone. Quoting from the document, DOD can take primacy over and may subsume the standing missions of other departments and agencies. That I don't know if that's what the idea that you were going for or not, but that was one of the ones that stood out to me.
Yeah, that was exactly where I was headed, because what that sounds like to me is somebody can decide that DOD takes the lead and then they own it. No matter what the situation is, whether it's entirely military or not, DHS, you're on the sideline, and DOD, you're in charge.
Yeah, and we don't know exactly how that would work because, again, this is an unclassified version, a heavily redacted version of what was originally a secret document. So we don't know exactly which DHS missions would be pushed to the side and under what circumstances that would occur. We do know that it would require a directive from the President of the United States or, you know, the following of existing operational orders, which are also not clearly defined in this joint publication, but there are at least some rules about, you know, how that would happen. And people may or may not think that that's the right way to go, but I don't think it's an idea that I've heard the Pentagon talk about publicly in the past. Another one is a little bit of a new spin on the DOD mission to defend its own networks. And whenever DOD folks have talked about that mission in the past, in my experience, it's been in relatively passive terms. I mean, we'll basically put countermeasures in place and make sure the bad guys don't do anything seriously disruptive. But this document makes it clear that there are circumstances in which it's okay to basically attack the attacker, quoting, with the use of force. The unclassified version, again, doesn't spell out exactly whether that would mean bombs and bullets or just a pushback through cyberspace itself. But it, I mean, it does make it clear that we're not just, you know, we're not just engaging in a purely defensive act where we're, you know, trying to make sure there's no malware on our networks and we're hunting for bad guys. We're actively going to go after the bad guys if they are attacking us right now.
I'm struck by the robustness of the conversation in this publication, Jared, of offensive cyber operations. Just the fact that they're talking about them at all. I mean, for a long time, the Pentagon wanted to act like, and I think pretend, that they didn't exist at all. They never denied they were engaging in them. It just was something that wasn't really discussed, even when people brought up the question. And, you know, you write inside the Reporter's Notebook now, just because it's cyberspace doesn't mean those operations aren't subject to the law of war and foreign treaty obligations. Just the fact that they are going there indicates to me that it at least the definition of cyber attacks and how they fit into combat and conflict protocol is really on the table and is really under discussion. And as you say, we don't know what's in the classified document, but for this to be discussed at this level in an unclassified environment, striking to me.
Yeah, the other thing that's striking also, though, is that there's an enormous amount of time that's or an enormous amount of space that's spent in this document talking about how we'll conduct defensive cyber operations, both to, you know, the nation's assets and to DoD's own networks. There's a very small amount of space comparatively talking about the exact, you know, methods that we'll use conducting offensive cyber operations. But you're right. It is a little bit, it's very candid about the fact that there are offensive cyber capabilities within the Defense Department. And as you said, it also makes clear that, you know, just because it's in cyberspace doesn't mean that we don't follow the laws of war anymore. So it's going to have to be subject to a presidential directive or some other legal authorization. Just because, you know, we're attacking people through the internet doesn't mean that we can throw every other treaty obligation that we've had on the books for decades to the side.
Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu going inside the Reporter's Notebook. It's posted at federalnewsradio.com. We have just a couple of minutes left. And you point out, you point people to former Secretary Robert Gates's biography, and he was very proud, as he should have been, of the rapid acquisition model that got MRAPs to the field much faster than they would have normally. And you write about Andrew Hunter, who is the director of DOD's rapid acquisition cell, doesn't talk to the media much, and he's leaving the Pentagon soon to go to the Center for Strategic and International Studies. But he is making the case for how the Pentagon has done at embedding or embroidering that rapid acquisition process into the Pentagon's overall acquisition process. What's the case that he's making, Jared?
Well, yeah, Hunter's a really interesting guy, and I'm a bit disappointed that he didn't do more interviews while he was in the Pentagon over the past 4 years, but I'm sure he'll talk more to us as he moves into the think tank world. He's been in charge of the Joint Rapid Acquisition Cell for the past couple of years, and I think one of the main objectives has been to, as you kind of alluded to make sure that whenever there's a need for another MRAP that Secretary Gates instigated, the system can just respond to it organically. You know, it doesn't take heroic measures by the Secretary of Defense personally. And as a side note, that was kind of a theme that kept coming up over and over again while I was doing research for the series that we just aired last week on acquisition reform. You know, people who've been studying this for decades kept coming back to the idea that, you know, the system's in trouble if the only way you can get it to work in a sensible way is if the SecDef makes it his top priority. Hunter thinks that DoD has done a lot to make sure that the Pentagon doesn't sit in a state of paralysis the next time one of those kinds of requirements comes up. And he kind of made two points to us yesterday. One is that the system actually worked really well the last time it needed to do something, when we needed to get rid of Syria's chemical weapons. We managed to integrate Navy technologies and Army technologies and put them all on board a civilian ship and do all of that within a few months. The second main point he makes is that DoD has put rapid acquisition into permanent policy in a way that it never did before, and the Pentagon added that to its main guidebook for acquisition last year. I challenged him a little bit on that idea during the roundtable yesterday at the Pentagon on this whole idea that writing policies is going to do very much to bring about culture change in the Pentagon. But his basic argument is that it shows people basically what's kind of the art of the possible. I'm not sure how much time we've got here left, Francis, but I can play a little clip of that.
Just about out of time, and I wanted to point out a couple of the other things that you have inside the reporter's notebook. Thank you for that. Pentagon announcing some policy changes to cut back on travel expenses. Jared has all the details on that. And DISA is starting to look for ways to expand its classified commercial smartphone service. And you've got great details inside the reporter's notebook, as always, my friend. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Always a pleasure.